Welcome back to another bonus story. This interview that I did with Tessa Williams was very interesting, very enlightening. But there's a lot of it that you haven't heard, and I'm going to explain why it's here in a minute. If you heard the outro of the episode, you probably came here wondering about what happened after she became a Christian. Yes, her story was in the New York Post and in other newspapers. I could just find the New York Post article. Not that I look for other ones, I guess, but when you type it in Google, you find the New York Post article about her. And yeah, it was crushing to her, but she explained all of that and how she was accepted into a church after, you know, all that had happened. It's honestly very interesting. The reason why this didn't make the cut is because, very unfortunately, there were a lot of birds that decided to sing in the middle of our conversation, which made it, honestly, I was able to fix it, but it still made it, I would say, uncomfortable or harder to listen to. So that's why it's here. If it bothers you too much, well, then you can skip or whatever. You don't need to listen to this part. It starts, I forget exactly where, but probably after 10 minutes. But you'll hear them. You won't miss them. You'll still be able to understand what happened, though. So if you're interested in knowing what happened, which it's a fascinating story, it's beautiful. It'll be good, and you'll be able to get through it. So that's where it's at. Just wanted to give you a heads up, but it's a beautiful story, along with a bunch of other things that happened after she became a Christian that were part of her story, but we couldn't really cover because of that technical issue. So here's the video. I'm going to let you to it now and stop talking. And I hope that you enjoy the rest of her story. You talked about how there's young men that will come to you in BDSM sessions, and that they would go to that point because everything else didn't stimulate them as much. And it just escalates and escalates and escalates. And you also talked about some of that when it comes to that happening to you, but with pain medication or just medication in general. And I think that that's something that people don't necessarily realize enough, that just like drugs, that porn is also the same kind of thing. And it's very destructive. And if you start, then it leads to more. And I've talked to former drug addicts, and it starts with something that most of the time people will be like, it's not too bad, right? But then it escalates. And, you know, before they know it, they're in the streets hooked on heroin or something like that, right? And it's something very similar that happens in this circle. So I just wanted to point it out, because I feel like it's something that if it hadn't already jumped out to a viewer, I think it's really something that should jump out from your story.
Yeah. And it came from, it wasn't even from the coke that I had done in the clubs, because on my days off, I wasn't doing coke, but I was still feeling the effects of what I was doing, because I went to the doctor and I said, listen, I'm doing this job and I'm not happy doing this job and I can't. I explained my situation with the ID and everything, and he recommended antidepressants. That was the answer, antidepressants for my situation. So when I took them, I started off on a low dose and realized that the low dose after a while wasn't enough, and I kept increasing the dose and increasing. And then unbeknownst to him, I'd increased it a bit more, because after a while you're starting to feel. And then I was putting on the weight, and that job, you can't put on weight, no way. And then I was on the prescription weight loss drugs. And then I couldn't sleep, and went to the doctor to explain that medication was keeping me awake. And he prescribed the Valiums, and Valiums were not enough after a while, because I'd be taking a few of those to get to sleep. And then someone recommended Xanax to me. He didn't want to give me Xanax because I was already on a lot. So I illegally got Xanax. And then on this cocktail of meds, and even mixing them together and taking a Valium and a Xanax together, because that was my little cocktail for going to sleep, was just how I would just get through the day. It wasn't about even getting high. It was just about getting through the day and just being numb, not feeling. And kind of realize that that's what emotions and feelings are there for. it's kind of also your body's release, and you can't hide them, you can't bottle them up. You've got to go through them. You've got to go through the sadness. You've got to go through anger and shame and guilt and everything. And it was starting to even numb my skin. And when I was hurting myself in these sessions, and I was also doing stuff to myself to hurt myself to feel, I was numb and it was driving me insane. But it's just, as long as I didn't feel what I was feeling in that, being in that industry, I was happy.
Yeah. And it's a beautiful story of redemption that there is in your case. And I know a lot of people look up to you and people like you as an example, because it can't be easy to leave a life like that. And no. I'm sure, I mean, you talked about it a little bit, but there were probably a lot of challenges to get reintroduced to regular life. I mean, one of the questions that I have is, what happened with your family? First of all, how much did they know beforehand? And were these relationships able to be healed to some extent?
My family did know what I was doing, except for my mom. She was kind of in the dark, but she knew about the stripping. She didn't know because we had lost contact and she went to South Africa for a time and came back to Perth. We cut contact with each other. It was for personal reasons. And it was my dad and my sister. And yes, they knew what I was doing. My sister even voted for me in the adult industry awards. And she knew everything. I was very open on my Instagram. And they knew what I was doing. And not once did one of them say, why are you doing this? Can we help you? They knew my ID because I constantly brought it up that I needed ID for certain things. It was only brought up with, yeah, we can't help you. Sorry, we're unable to help you. And yeah, even though I got a lawyer that said to me, yes, your family member can help you regardless of your age. And my family, I had to cut contact with my sister and my dad after what had happened there. A lot had happened around that time. And it's best for my healing. I cut contact altogether. It was too much for my healing. I pray for them. I pray for the family that they find God. They had also left the church as well. And not that I even think they were involved in any way in the church. And I pray for healing, whatever is hurting them that makes them want to hurt others. I just pray God heals them. My mom, I had to, even though we did talk, we were close, I had to cut contact as well and just go focus on my healing, my journey, because there was still a lot of hurt in our past that it's not going to get, that it has to be in God's hands to resolve, because it was constantly being brought up with the hurting. And how I said, can you people have sat back and looked at me doing this job and thought that's okay? And it took that far for one of you to actually step up and say, can I help you now? And it was even with my past of things that happened to me in my past, of just things that I'm not ready to speak about now. But a lot of stuff happened in my past that my mother was able to turn a blind eye on. And even an apology wouldn't have been enough. And I can't pretend that these things did not happen, that. And the best is that we have a distance. We call each other around Christmas and that was it. And it's just best to just keep the distance, focus on the healing and focus on my journey. And I do pray for them a lot. It's in God's hands is all I can say. So first thing I did was, like, I had to get government assistance because I had no job. So from there, government assistance, and not knowing who was I now? I was not contested all the dominatrix. I went from being someone that men were worshipping at my feet and paying money for me to hurt them to a nobody in the middle of a town way out far where I was living and not knowing where do I turn, like just thinking this can't be it, I'm stuck, and just having to put my faith again in Jesus of where to go, because I don't know what I'm going to do with my life. Where am I? I don't have a high school diploma. So from there, I just enrolled in, like, they asked me at the at the Centrelink place. Like, we've got study courses for you to do, which the government can pay for. So I was like, yeah, okay. I took the business medical admin one. It's something. It was a certificate C, which is like the equivalent to a high school diploma, and which was good enough. I did that for 2 years. I studied that on, but before that, like while I was studying, I was starting to attend church, and all I can think of was Hillsong. Hillsong was not the Brethren Church that I grew up with. Hillsong was different. I've seen it online. I did go once years ago, once with a friend, and I thought, yeah, okay, this is a good church, but I didn't think much of it. So I found a Hillsong church that was near me, and I went, and the message was good. And it wasn't really, like, for me, that's kind of like, I'm not very a sociable person. It was fine. I didn't really want to talk to anyone. I was just there for the message and go home. And it was a great message. I loved attending the services. And then there was a COVID outbreak, of course, and the services stopped and went back online. And I thought, you've got to be kidding me. And just going, Lord, where do I go now? Do I have to just watch them online again? Which I was okay, but it's different being there in the service and watching. The message was just, I don't know, I pay attention better if it's in person. And then I went for a walk. And as I was going for a walk, I walked past a church. It was a very modern looking church and had bouncing castles and lights out the front. And all I heard was the message from the pastor. And then I heard, "You belong here," over the speakers. And I thought, hang on, this cannot be a sign. And then I had a look, and it said Echo Church Sydney on there. And I looked at them on my phone and everything. I read about them, and I read how they're not afraid to speak the truth and everything. And they're very unfiltered. And that's very much like me. I'm very unfiltered. I need to hear the truth. So I went the following week. I went there and I wrote them an email as well. I said, listen, is there any way I could just come and listen to a message and leave after? They didn't get back to me. So I thought, okay, I'm just going to go there, slip in the back and leave, because it's a small church. It's not like Hillsong where you can just slip in and slip out. So as soon as I showed up, first time there, and a bunch of people turned around and smiled at me. And I was like, nah, did a U-turn, try to walk out. And the guy grabbed me by my arm and just brought me back in. He said, no, no. And he said, so have you been here before? And welcome to Echo Church. And oh, it's great to have you here. They were also very nice. And they were talking to me and asked me, so how long have you been a Christian? And I didn't want to tell them about the middle bit. I said, oh, when I was young, and I left out the middle and just said, oh, just come back to the Lord. And I'm studying at the moment, looking for work. And yeah, and he said, you're welcome to sit at the front with us. And I went, no, well, I'm going to sit at the back. It's, yeah, when I'm ready, I'll sit with you guys. And I just wasn't planning on, yeah, just being the message impacting me the way that it did, because the message of this church is, it doesn't sugarcoat anything. And for me at that point in my life, for my values at that time, needed to hear that truth without being sugarcoated off. I was blown away by the message. Like, wow, it still to this day, that message is something that I got to hear. Even if it's going to offend me, I've got to hear it. And it's what God wants you to hear. It's straight from the Bible. And afterwards, when I was leaving, the pastor's wife, who's also a pastor there, her name's Pastor Nolene, came up to me and said, she asked me questions. Then she said, what's your testimony? And I said, I'm not ready to tell you yet. Like, I'll tell you when I'm ready. And I was scared that they were going to judge me, because how many other former dominatrix sex workers are going to walk into this church in the middle of a small town? And I went and I told my mum. And she said, just go. If they judge you, there'll always be another church. But you're there for God. You're not there for the people. Just focus on the message. And I went back the following week. And straight after the message, she made a beeline towards me again. I thought, okay, here we go. So she asked me the question straight up. What's your testimony? And then I told her everything. We sat down. I told her from start to finish. I told her everything. Like, I didn't leave anything out, and I told her the truth. I didn't say it for shock value. I said it because it was the truth. This is what I've done in my life and who I was, and this is how I found God. And then she stopped, and then she looked at me, she hugged me and said, you're not that anymore. You're a child of God. And it was a real hug. It wasn't like a, she gave me a nice warm hug and said, you're a child of God now. And that's when I truly felt that this was my family, not my family, but this was my, where I needed to be. And that was somewhere that people didn't see the past. She said, we all have a past. That's the thing. Jesus didn't come for the broken. I mean, he didn't come for the perfect. He came for the broken. He came, there's not one person here that doesn't have a backstory. Like, and over time, different people in that church had told me they come from different walks of life of crime and everything else. And yeah, so they didn't put up the facade that they were living a perfect life, that they did come from backgrounds of course that were not saintly. So it just made me think, well, this is what a church is meant to be. It's not a they're not judging me for my past of what I of who I used to be. And if someone did kind of have a nose out of joint, they're not there anymore, because the church does not put up with judging people for who they were in their past. I feel like I belong there. I feel like, yeah, as I don't feel like I was a sex worker. And then one day I get asked by, because I told one of the mothers that I used to work in childcare, and she said, you should serve in kids' ministry. And I just, no. Yeah, if we're like, at the time, I just thought it was, no, I think the mothers would be uncomfortable with someone like me being in childcare. But then on my way to the service, one of the little kids said, hi, Tessa, to me. And I, the first time I heard my name being sound so pure and so sweet. And I thought, wow, Tessa, not Contessa at all, which I was so used to being called for years, Tessa. And it was said so purely. And I don't know, that was like the moment that it shifted that, yeah, maybe I do want to be with children again. Because I used to work in a daycare center, and I did love working with the kids before I kind of went into the adult industry. So I worked in the within kids ministry, and like people knew my story. It wasn't a problem. And they saw how I was with the kids, and they saw that I was able to handle a big group of kids as well. And I could be loving. I could be very strict as well. And I can also have a lot of fun on their level. And also to turn the messages like into something that they want to hear, take out the judgment for them, because I don't want them to hear what I heard. So I always kind of make sure it's something that doesn't make them feel bad, that kind of doesn't make them feel judged and horrible. And then it's like they say, the enemy comes for you. The enemy's not done. The enemy wants to ruin everything. And one day I get a phone call. I put a photo of me and my Sunday school class online, which I thought at the time, people have forgotten me. People have moved on from the industry and put their families and their new careers and everything online. Who cares? This is Australia. I put my Sunday school class online, and for just a little class photo of us. And then I get a few days later a message from a woman who said that she's a journalist, and said that she said, Tessa, are you a Sunday school teacher? I said, yes. Why? She goes, do they know about your past? I said, of course they do. I said, everyone in my church knows about my past. And she just sounded like so happy for me, like, that's great. And yeah, that and your church supports you and they know. I said, yeah, of course they do. And I said, everyone there said kind of has a backstory. And honestly, it's the best thing that's happened to me. I'm very happy now. I'm content. And yeah, left it at that. And then one Sunday, that following Sunday, I was in kids ministry and my phone was going off. Like, I was thinking, is this mum trying to get through? And must be bad news, because it was this constant ding, ding, ding of messages coming through. And I went to go switch that off because it was distracting. And then when I looked at the messages, it was like people saying, have you seen this? Oh, I'm so sorry. Are you okay? Like, and it was like, what's going on? I clicked on one of the messages and it was a link to a news article. Front page, me. She used to be a dominatrix. Now she's a Sunday school teacher. She used to whip men with Bibles and now she's teaching a Sunday school. The most disgusting news headlines. And I'm not talking about Australia. I'm talking about around the world. It was the New York Times. It was in India. It was in the UK. It was everywhere. And I was taken aback. I couldn't breathe. I nearly dropped that phone. I had to get one of the other leaders to take over the class while I walked out, and I went to the bathroom, and like, I was hyperventilating. And one of the mothers came out of the stall, and I showed her. And she goes, listen, you've been very honest with us. It's fine. Just don't worry about it. Like, it's like she didn't see the severity of it. And I went back into the class, like, trying to hold it together, just thinking this will be the last time I'll be teaching this class, because you've got a photo of me holding a whip in a dominatrix outfit in lingerie next to a photo of me in my Sunday school uniform. And I'm thinking, there's no way they're going to let me continue on in this place. So after it had finished, I went straight up to the pastor's wife, to Pastor Nolene, showed her all the news articles. And as I was looking, it's getting worse and worse because it's everywhere. It's like every newspaper was jumping on it. And then she looked at it and she goes, listen, Echo Church is in the newspaper all the time and it'll blow over and they will move on from that. And she just said, church has got your back. We have got your back. We know you. The mothers here have got your back as well. We know who you are. You've never lied to us from day one. And that's when I really felt, these are Christians. These are Christians. Any other place would have straight away called a whole meeting, deciding whether to have me. She was straight away, you'll be fine. They were just telling me just to relax. Like, I thought, I'm making your church look bad. But no, they said, listen, it's fine. You're going to get through this. And then my mom as well, who was reading the articles, mom was trying to get me to see the funny side of it. But at the time, I was just not seeing it. And I thought, this is it. It's over. I'm humiliated. Like, every sex worker's worst nightmare is to have, when you'd left the industry, to have your past outed with your real name and then your work name. And there I was around the world. I thought this was the ultimate humiliation. And I thought, God, what have you done to me? Have you taken me this far just to humiliate me? But it was just a case of this feeling over me by then was like, you've got to trust me. You've got to trust me on this. So one day I cried it out. And the next day, I was getting messages sent to me, other than just the usual death threats and horrible comments from men. I was getting sex workers message me saying that they read my story and it's amazing and they've been wanting to get out. And they've been recently, they've also been just wanting to get back to the church. And my story kind of just given them that little kick to make them want to go back to a church. They were scared of being judged for being sex workers, going back to a church. But the kind of the story, even as ridiculous as the headline was, the story that they read, they said it was beautiful. It's beautifully written that someone had found God and gone back to the church and was just embraced by the church community. So it kind of given them the just, yeah, if they want to go to church again and just following that life to go do it. And it's just the more I focused on those messages, I thought that I could it's helping these women. Like, they're reading their ultimate nightmare happen in the media, but it's actually, yeah, showing them it's not so bad that if your past gets out, no one came after me with pitchforks. The worst that happened was my name got splashed for about one day. And then it was, I wrote to it was an outreach ministry at the time. And I explained my whole situation to them. And I also wrote at the very end, and I also feel alone in my church because I feel that everyone has a family at this age in my life. I should have a family. I should have kids. And I said, I felt alone. And they wrote back to me and said, listen, you're not alone. God, you're not alone. Just look around you was what they wrote. They didn't write God is around you. They wrote, just look around you. You're not alone. And I did. I looked at these messages that was not only sent by other from workers around the world and some even well-known sex workers from being sent to me and just saying that, yeah, we read your story. It's beautiful. We just honestly, it's just made us just honestly like it's just something good that was written about a sex worker. Like, even I saw the horrible, the humiliating side. They saw it as beautiful, as getting out of the industry and finding freedom and just asking questions about God and everything else. And yeah, I spoke to them. I even prayed with some of them over the phone. And I thought, and even the outreach said to me, have you thought about doing outreach and helping the women? We have an outreach once a month. We go to the brothels and we go and we speak to the women. And I jumped on that. I said, yes. I said, I'm the most comfortable person in that situation. And I was going out once a month, speaking to girls, meeting even more girls. And a lot of them didn't even recognize me from that article, and asking me questions. And of course, having a bunch of Christians come to a brothel, they are very, but seeing one of their own that used to be in their industry, they were open to tell me what's happening and how they want to get out and they need help. And I'd just tell them that, what have you got to lose with God? Just pray. Like, what have you got to lose by just asking God for help? You got nothing to lose. Like, that's how I just kind of get them started in that. But it's now I'm actually leading that outreach. I'm the outreach for that one. So, and I'm still in the Sunday school, by the way. So I didn't go anywhere from that. So it's like God had shown me exactly what he was going to do with my past and exactly what he was going to do with that article, with that story, to reach out to more people, to just spread my story and to spread what God has done for me. And a lot of women, when I notice, all the former sex workers that have now become Christians, is there's a community of us from around the world. It's like we've all joined networks. We've all connected with each other. And I've also had a very, very famous one contact me recently that found God. And it's because she'd seen my article from over there. And she'd actually add me on Instagram and messaged me when she'd come out recently and got the usual death threats and everything from people. And yeah, I spoke to her and I connected her with another one that was in her area. And it's like we became our own community of women together that have to kind of stand together to kind of support each other when the rest of the world is saying, no, you girls are not allowed in our churches. We've got each other to kind of boost each other up and say, no, I'm praying for you, sister. I'm here for you. I know your path. And that's when it's kind of, I realize God is using my past, is using all our past, no matter where we're from, what we've done. And it's just, yeah, he's used that past. And I think what really stood out to me was this one in particular sex worker that I had. She was first a Playboy bunny and then she became a porn star and sex worker before she'd left the industry and got married and found God. And she's a grandmother now. And this woman had the prince, what was his name again? Forgotten. It was a certain prince. It was a certain prince who used to fly her in private jets to castles and just hire her for the weekend. If you had to be a sex worker, that was the one you were kind of aiming to be, because this girl had everything, the looks, the money, everything. And I messaged her out of the blue and I said, it was amazing to see that you found God. And she said, listen, I was nothing before I found God, nothing. So that was like a big, wow, you had what we thought was everything, private jets, the castle being flown out to, and here you're saying that you were nothing until you had found God, amen. So that kind of just having that community of women around me and just realizing that we need to keep, we've got to help each other, which is why I strongly, if I see a sex worker being outed in the, even being harassed, I'd be the first to jump in for her, no matter what she's done. I will be there to jump in for her and just defend her. And I've had other sex workers thank me for it, even though they're not a Christian, just, yeah, okay, so you've been humiliated in the media for something that you've done. I'm there defending them. I don't defend the industry, but I'll defend her. And just knowing that if ever she needs to leave, I'll be there for her. I'll be there to be that lifeline, to say, sister, oh, we're here for you. There's a family waiting for you, which is very much needed now with this time of OnlyFans.